Happy Hall of Fame Day, Jeff Merritt.
Hey, Happy Hall of Fame Day, Greg Wyshynski. I was going to go, but I'm a little under the weather, and I have one sick kid, another one that I have to pick up in 45 minutes, so I'm full-time dad tonight.
Oh.
So I can't make it, so I gotta watch. Yeah, I know. It's
who's
kind of a drag.
Dad? Who's gonna be dad tonight? Who's gonna take care of the kids?
Nick Kotsenik is at the Hockey Hall of Fame tonight, so follow him on Twitter for all
awesome.
That. We'll obviously on Puck Daddy have any of the video or crazy cool speeches. Are you someone who believes the NHL should go dark on Hockey Hall of Fame night?
Well, there's only the one game. See, I would be in support of them going dark if there was a number of people going to the hall and there were a lot of people from those organizations that should be at the hall celebrating those teams. Like, it wasn't a couple of years ago, was it, when Glenn Anderson went in, that there was an Oilers game that night or a Ranger game as well, so a lot of those Oilers/Ranger players couldn't make it to the Hall of Fame, and there's kind of that, well, why would you do that, knowing that you already know who goes into the Hockey Hall of Fame? So mm-hmm. I think if you strategically plan it, you can get around it and not have to go dark. I mean, they're only icing the one game tonight, so that's cool. I'm more concerned with the NHL going dark on trade deadline day because there's so many players swapping jerseys that it's a competitive disadvantage.
That's actually a really great idea. I always felt it's
on that day.
There was nothing more awkward I felt than on trade deadline day when you had guys who knew their names were in play and guys who knew they had one skate out the door, then not getting traded and then having to talk about it after a game. Like, it's different.
Yeah,
I'll talk about it after a practice. It's a totally different thing, like after a game, to be having.
No.
Oh, so good game tonight, eh? Pretty good win. By the way, how did it feel like to have your name bandied about in trade rumors the entire day and have one skate out the door, knowing that your team doesn't want you here despite the fact you had two assists tonight? As far as the NHL going dark, I disagree. I think there should be a full slate of games tonight. I think the Hockey Hall of Fame is great, and I appreciate that the hockey world's focus is there, but it is not the National Hockey League Hall of Fame. It's the Hockey Hall of Fame.
The idea that life stops in
real hockey for this ceremony tonight is, to me, kind of nonsensical.
Hey, Greg. Everybody going in tonight played in the hall. It played in the NHL. And
yep.
The one official officiated in the NHL.
Yep, that's true.
So
no,
this year is the NHL Hall of Fame.
But it's not the NHL Hall of Fame. I mean, as we know. I mean, we all know how many players that have never appeared in the National Hockey League are in the Hall. That's probably none.
Is Cassie Campbell going into the Hall of Fame this year? Oh, no, right. There were no women that went in this
year. Oh,
time.
No,
right,
it's true. Okay. I mean, like, if you obviously, the only way that you're getting in having not played in the National Hockey League is if you have a vagina. We all know that. I mean, anybody who is the best player in the Swedish leagues or the best player in the Finnish leagues or the best player in Russia – I guess Karlamov's the only guy that probably
got in without
getting any NHL stuff on his resume worth of note.
Well, don't tell Ed Van Impe that, who chopped him down in that game against the Philadelphia Flyers. But you're right. It wasn't like – it was whenever the Red Army team would come and
– Oh, you're right.
Tour,
you're right. I'm sorry.
Through.
Let me rephrase that. As long as you were in the National Hockey League or did some – or were something – someone of note to Canadians – be it as a villain or an adversary, then you can get in the Hockey Hall of Fame. Let's be honest here.
So Philippe Ozon's not getting in as the best French player of all time. How dare you, Greg
Wyshynski?
I know it's more the it really has become the NHL Hall of Fame. But you can make the argument that if it's a Hall of Fame for the best hockey players, and then that's the best hockey league. So by de facto, those players should go in. But I'm with you. I wish there was more of an international flavor to it, but.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way it is, yo. Now
before you go on, the problem I have with that, by the way, is the idea that the international flavor, the international considerations that go along with being in the Hall of Fame here's how NHL centric it is. It's usually that the case that you make as an NHL player isn't good enough, but if you did things in international play that makes up for the fact that you weren't that good in the NHL, which is insane. Like, the be-all, end-all of winning the cup or leading the NHL in goals or points or what have you is so – the emphasis is so NHL-centric and so North American-centric that literally if you were – a record-setting player in another league internationally or an amazing accomplished player in international tournaments, that's like the other part of your resume. That's like the outside of work interests part of your resume versus the actual accomplishments. It's insane.
Help put you over the top. The one thing that I had that I find, and again, I could have done my, and maybe if we have time today, we can, my annual plea for Lauren Chabot to get into the Hockey Hall of Fame, knowing full well that he's not going to, or as he was once called, as we all know, by the New York Americans, Lauren Shabotsky, to try to attract more of a Jewish audience
right.
To the rink, much like...
And also...
What was his name? Oli Renica. Mm-hmm. Remember the Oli Renica story? How the New York Americans wanted to get more Italians to the game, so they changed his name to Oli Rocco. It was actually on game sheets for a couple of games until someone caught on. Wait a minute. Now that I think about it. Okay. What was with... Okay. Hey, New York teams of the 1920s, I'm talking to you. Mm-hmm. Between Oli Rocco and Lauren Shabotsky and Rene Boileau, who I think I mentioned on the podcast not that long ago, who the New York Rangers... under Tommy Duggan. No, that was the Americans. The other was Rangers. The Americans turned his name, or tried to turn his name, from Rene Boileau to attract more, to make sort of the novelty of us having the first First Nations hockey player. They changed his name to Rainy Drinkwater. He was a guy from Point Claire, you know, in Quebec.
This is why I never understood.
Was those Ranger, what? All those New York teams trying to change everybody's name to either sound Jewish, First Nation, or Italian to try to
and
get more people in the building?
I never understood why the Rangers never traded for Aki Berg or Tomas or Alex Steen. It doesn't make any sense. Why wouldn't you go down that road again?
Aki Berg would have been Al Burns if they would have got him. two defensemen. Al Burns. Yeah, he's really tearing up the league. But here's my tub thumping today.
All right.
Pat Foley, who wins the Foster Hewitt, the Elmer Ferguson, goes to our good friend Kevin Allen of USA Today, very well deserving. As part of his speech, as part of his thank you today, made the case for Doug Wilson to go into the Hockey Hall of Fame. You know, nice numbers, big hard shot from the point, a good, you know, really good, solid defense in the Chicago Blackhawks, and for a couple of years for the San Jose Sharks, first captain of that franchise. And now, of course, a general manager of the San Jose Sharks. So he made a case for Doug Wilson to go in, to which I thought, well, that's all fine and dandy, but how about making the case for someone in your industry? Hmm. Like, you remember when Mark Messier made, you know, as part of his speech, he said, I hope the Hall finds it in their hearts and in their minds to open up these doors for Glenn Anderson. Mm-hmm. And that was really what put Andy over the top. Like, that's what got Glenn Anderson into the Hall of Fame.
Well, I
mean,
and the lowering standards of candidacy for Hall of Fame players, evidently.
Oh, wow. And Andy was good, man. He was a good player. Right, okay. Regardless, we can have the pros and cons of Bernie Federico and Bob Pulford and the Red Clark Gillies and the rest of them. But here's what I was thinking. So, Greg, I want you to take a little tour of the internet with me.
Please.
I want you to go to a Wikipedia site called Foster Hewitt Memorial Award.
Okay,
everyone playing along. Hewitt Memorial Award. Everybody listening right now, at your desks, on your laptop, whatever, you're at work, you're at home, whatever you're doing, just go to Foster Hewitt Memorial Award.
Okay. I'm here.
Okay, you're there. Now, this award started in 19...
Looks like the listeners are way ahead of you. According to this, the 2014 winner was Poopy McShitpants. I'm kidding.
Wow, okay, so everyone's already spiked this thing. Okay, so you go back to 1984, right? And we have play-by-play voices. You know, we have Fred Cusick. We have Foster Hewitt, Danny Gallivan, Cannonading Drive, Rene LeCavalier.
Dial this back for a second. Foster Hewitt won the Foster Hewitt Award in 1984.
It's first one. You won your own award. Pretty good, eh?
And the winner of the Mark Messier Leadership Award is me, Mark
Messier. Ah, thank you for an unprecedented fifth year in a row. Now, where's my check? Okay, so I want you all to have a quick scan of this list here and tell me, by and large, I mean 95% of them, what do they all do? What qualifies you to make it to the Hockey Hall of Fame under the banner of the Foster Hewitt Memorial Award? I'll take a little pause here and reset myself and wait for your answer.
Looks like a lot of them were members of Hockey Night in Canada.
There were plenty, but I'm going to get to Hockey Night in Canada one second when I make my point here. By and large, all of these people all worked in the broadcast booth.
That's correct.
All did play-by-play or all did color. And that is a very important job, and we all grew up with these voices, and we all love these voices. You know, I, for one, although I didn't get a chance to watch him do much with the St. Louis Blues or him do much with St. Louis Blues, I still think that Dan Kelly's call of the 1987 Canada Cup is one for the ages and one that should be taught in broadcast school if you are interested in sports. The legendary Jigs McDonald, you go all the way down to Bob Miller, a good friend, Chuck Caton. Mike Emmerich, of course, who didn't love JD with the Rangers and also part of Hockey Night in Canada. Go right down the list. Harry Neal. And, like, there's some great names in there. We all love them and all that. But that's only part of a broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
Last time I checked, play-by-play and color is only part of a broadcast. Because right. I would make the point to you, Greg, that Ward Cornell, that Dave Hodge, that Ron McLean, and James Duthie, all should have consideration, and they were all studio hosts of their various hockey broadcasts. Why is it that every year it's someone that does play-by-play or color? Now, you say as well, Merrick, of course, you're a studio host. Of course you'd be saying this. No, but it is a very – honestly, and I'm not trying to put myself in the category of those people, but I'm saying that the one that really stands – well, two, I mean, Ward does, but how Dave Hodge doesn't get consideration is beyond me.
Yeah.
I think Dave Hodge should be in the Hall of Fame going away. Like, that shouldn't even be a debate. It's like, oh, well, of course Dave Hodge is in the Hall of Fame under the Foster Hewitt Award. But he's not. Because for some reason, we don't think of studio hosts as part of the hockey broadcast. Meanwhile, they frame everything for us.
Our question of the day is, which member of the media belongs in the Hockey Hall of Fame? And the venerable Damian Cox agrees. Dave Hodge was his answer.
Did you say Hodge?
Of the day. Yeah.
Good for Damian.
Now,
good
the name that we're seeing a lot here is the name that I'd put forward. And Down Goes Brown puts it forward as well. Which would be Donald F. Cherry. Now, how that guy
100%.
Didn't win that award. I mean, it is, like you said, the Foster Hewitt is the award presented by the Hockey Hall of Fame to members of radio and television industry who make outstanding contributions to their profession and the game of ice hockey during their broadcasting career.
Uh-huh.
I don't see Don Cherry's name on here. I cannot conceive how Don Cherry's name isn't on here for this award.
One, and you know why? Because there's a bias against people that work studio.
Yeah.
There really is. Like, if you work studio as part of a game presentation, oh, they just do studio. We worry about truck. We worry about the play-by-play guys. People that are at the rink doing it. Well, who has made a bigger contribution, right? A bigger contribution to hockey. Now, regardless of how you may feel about his views, who has made a better contribution or a more significant contribution to hockey than Don Cherry? Or, before that, Dave Hodge. And dovetailing that, Ron McLean, even before all of them, Ward Cornell. Right? And Duthie's right up there too. Duthie's in that mix. All these guys. How they don't get consideration every year to me. I mean, I just shrug and say, okay, here it comes. And not to take anything away from, you know, from Mickey Redman and Rick Jenneret and Peter Mahar. Like, all these guys are very talented broadcasters and deserve their place. All I'm saying is, doesn't there have to eventually be a time where we say, hold on a second, there is more to a game broadcast than the guys that play, that say, he shoots, he scores, and, oh, I think that was offside.
No, I think you're right. And we're getting a lot of very interesting answers here, including Shirley Fischler, which is an interesting one.
Shirley and Stan. They were in a number of great hockey. Look, I grew up reading Fischler books. I don't know about you.
Mm-hmm.
But I read a ton of Fischler books.
Getting a lot of print, also broadcast.
Print falls under Elmer Ferguson.
Elmer Ferguson. Right,
that's what the print
Elliot Friedman gets a vote here. Mike Milbury gets a vote. Bob McKenzie gets a vote. McKenzie is actually a very interesting choice. I mean, you want to take totality
of
a career.
You could do both for Bob.
One name that sticks out to me, as long as we're talking about broadcast, though, and I say this as begrudgingly as a human being can begrudgingly say something begrudgingly.
Here comes Pierre McGuire.
Pierre McGuire.
Well, I mean, you're not wrong.
I mean, think of it this way. I mean, you know, and Sam Flood from NBC will be the first to tell you this and then tell you it again and then tell you it again and then one more time. Pierre McGuire is the founding member of that between the benches thing.
100%. I
mean, he's the guy who
developed
that role and did that role and does that role in his own unique way better than others in some ways. If you're down with that, if that's your, you know, brand of vodka, that's cool. But, I mean, he would be a Hall of Fame member of the media if you were to really kind of take a step back and say, okay, growth of the game, dedication to the game, all that jive, fits the bill, doesn't
contribution to the game. You may not and I've always made this point, you may not like the shotgun style delivery, and some don't, But there's no denying that was a huge innovation to the game that many broadcasts have aped, and he still remains, obviously now more so in the United States than in Canada, someone who presents hockey and presents its history to Americans on NBC.
Taylor Negrelli writes in, Mackenzie Friedman and eventually Tyler Dello. Now, if we were going to – listen, I have often thought about how what my acceptance speech will win will be when I win the Elmer Ferguson
Award. The Elmer Ferguson?
Award. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And I am inducted as a vanguard of blogging. I get what you're saying with Dello, but I honestly, like, complete hyperbole aside, if there was going to be someone who went in for blogging – or as the vanguard of blogging, it should be Myrtle. I mean, Myrtle's the guy who classed up the joint. Myrtle's the guy who bridged the gap between the sitting in your parents' basement in your underwear, you know, whatever, to respectability. I mean, like, I helped grow it and help proliferate dick jokes, but Myrtle's the guy who actually, like, said here's the way that you can do this new form of media and do it intelligently. Oh, and by the way, I'm also a guy that you can trust, and I think he did more to establish it more than anything else, the blogger to beat writer transition that he made versus anything I did. So if you were going to do the honoring a blog thing, I'd give it to James before I'd give it to myself.
You're selling yourself short, too, because there is a place in hockey for dick jokes, and it's a place that says, let's not take ourselves too seriously.
Yeah.
Let's not get too far ahead of ourselves, and you know, to the point where we can't take criticism. Where we all get our undies in a knot here. There's a place for dick jokes.
There's a place for that, but you just hit the nail on the head, which is that I've also been quite critical of the people that would probably be the ones deciding this. I am now officially Phil Kessel. I have burned all the bridges I can possibly burn with the media, and then therefore when it's my time to get in the Hall of Fame, I will have a Mark Howian weight before anybody would even consider me.
Oh, you want to go historical, it would be a Dick Duff-esque wait until someone, most notably Jim Gregory, stands up and makes your case.
To put it in baseball terms, I am Eddie Murray if Eddie Murray had had sex with all the wives of the Baseball Writers Association. That's pretty much how it is.
Am I being too frivolous here, or does that really resonate? Like, Don Cherry is a great one. Ron's a great one. I mean, there are so many people that are involved in the broadcast that don't win this award because every year it's the same bias. It's just like Marian Hossa, right? Winger with the Chicago Blackhawks will never win the Selke Trophy because that is a trophy that is biased towards centermen. Just like how the Foster Hewitt Award is biased towards guys that work in the booth.
But let's get right to it then. If you're going to do specialization on this award, I think we can all agree. Now, Josh Cooper wrote something on Puck Daddy today ranking all of the Hall of Famers since 97.
That's really good.
Who you'd want to pick to start your team. Last place on that ranking is probably last place for a lot of people as far as Hall of Famers in recent memory, which is Clark Gillies. The argument I've made for Gillies, and it's the only one you can make, is that he was the best at what he did in that role. The role he was asked to play, he was the best at what he did. So is there an argument for specialization? Can you make the argument that a studio host is different than a play-by-play guy and that you have to honor that position as much as you do anybody in the booth? Can you make the argument that if a guy was really good playing a specific role, and others have tried, but Gillies was the best at it, that is worthy of enshrinement? It's almost like the left-handed reliever argument in baseball I've often made. Like, Jesse Orozco was the best left-handed setup man in the history of baseball. Does that warrant immortality? Does that warrant his plaque being in there next to Tom Seaver? I don't know, but you could make the argument that it does if you're the best at what you did.
It is interesting because once you open that door, see, everyone thinks when you open that door, you have to look forward towards it, because I would make the argument that once you open that door and say, okay, we're going to let this person with this very unique skill set in this little cabal, I think you have to start looking backwards. And I'll give you the example. Bob Gainey is in the Hockey Hall of Fame because he was maybe the greatest two-way winger to ever play the game. Like, he was just such a fantastic two-way player.
Right.
Like he was probably the best at it, right? And many have followed, and you can count them up, and they created a trophy around him. But before there was Bob Gainey, there was Claude Provost, who was the original Bob Gainey. So I thought, you know, the moment you let in Bob Gainey and allow that specific skill set to have concert, don't you have to go back and say, you know what, now that we acknowledge that this is a thing that we find worthwhile, we need to go backwards and say, okay, who was Bob Gainey before there was Bob Gainey? And you quickly come back to Claude Provo.
Right. And I mean,
he is the guy.
Yeah, and they named a city in Utah after him. So, I mean, honestly, he should I think that's probably unrelated.
Okay. So, yeah, a little different there.
Sean Gordon's coming up to tell us about Montreal, but also talk a little bit about the Hall of Fame. We obviously need to talk about this class that's going in tonight officially, and they already have their rings and stuff. They're already in, I guess. I don't know how it works. Are you officially in if you get your ring, or do you have to go through the malarkey tonight? I don't know.
Yeah, you got to do your acceptance. I think probably as you do your acceptance. I mean, they're in once they got the call, essentially, today. And this is just like the formality. Here's the ring. Here's the photo op. Make your speech. All right, now go get drunk at Gretzky's.
Mike Modano, Dominic Hasek, Rob Blake, Peter Forsberg, one of the more complete and interesting classes that we've had. Hasek, to me, is the best goalie of all time. What say you?
Oh, wow. Oh, Glenn Hall. People, fans of Glenn Hall and Terry Sawchuk may take exception. Patrick Waugh, Martin Brodeur. But as far as being a goaltender that combined entertainment and brilliance, there was no better. And we've seen players on either side of it. Like Mike Palmateer was an entertaining goalie. I would never put him in the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Right. And in Hasek's case,
but Dominic Hasek is a complete different breed.
He lived up to his name. He was a dominator. He was one of the few goalies I've ever seen where it didn't matter what you did. He just would say no. You know what I mean?
Well, dude, it didn't matter if it was a game or practice.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Right? I never saw a goaltender who hated being scored on in practice more.
Yeah.
Anyway, our guest is standing by here.
All right, joining us now to talk about the streaking 6 in a row Montreal Canadiens, as well as the Hockey Hall of Fame and other issues. Sean Gordon, our old friend from the Globe and Mail, joins us here on the Merrick Rispinski podcast. Sean, Montreal, oh boy, 6 in a row, streaking to the top of the National Hockey League. What is it about these friggin' Habs that are going so well these days?
I keep expecting gravity to yank them back to earth, and I gotta tell you, they've been lucky. They've had things go their way, they've gotten calls, except I think we're past the point where we can say it's just one of those blips, and inevitably they're due for a market correction. I mean, I think maybe this is actually somewhere in there lurks a pretty good hockey team, and I think what you see particularly in the last week is when they score goals, when they have a balanced attack, I mean, they're basically impossible to defend. I mean, they've got guys who will kill you on the top two lines in terms of, like, the Pacioretty group. I mean, Pacioretty is just a really big, beefy dude with the great release and the great shot and the 39-goal pedigree or whatever you want to call it. You got Alex Galchenyuk on the next unit who, I don't know, is probably one of, in terms of raw talent, handsy kind of players. I don't know. I'm trying to think of a better young player in the league, and maybe the only guy I can come up with is Tarasenko, who's of that more or less generation vintage. And then the third line, all of a sudden they're getting production, and then Dale Weiss has 3 goals in 2 games. What are you going to do? I mean, you know, you get these guys, and if they can keep it out of their own net, which they're relatively good at doing, and the special teams wake up, all of a sudden you've got the ingredients here for a team that can do some interesting things.
To me, they're the most fascinating team in the NHL, Sean, for one of the reasons you touched on at the beginning of your answer there. They're the greatest team in the NHL right now, although I don't know that I've seen them play a great game.
That's true. And in fact, I would argue that the best game they've played all year, they lost 3-0 in Edmonton.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. Like when you look at them, I mean, there have been moments of individual brilliance, and I think a lot of what we're seeing, if the Montreal Canadiens are a pencil, Carey Price is the eraser, and all of a sudden those mistakes go bye-bye, and they hang in games, and they hang around, and all of a sudden, you're right, Dale Weiss pops in a pair or gets a Gordie Howe hat-trick against the Boston Bruins, and they're off to the races. But I just don't know that I've seen a full 3 periods from this team that I look at every single morning online in the standings, and it's right there. It says, Jeff, this is the best team in the NHL.
All they do is win. Although it's interesting also, I might even actually take a small issue with your perception of Price there, in the sense that he's been very good at in spurts and in certain moments and at key moments, but he hasn't been as great as he was. No. There were some transcendent stretches, particularly last season, where you just thought, you know, I was listening to you guys talking about Hasek, and it's where you just thought, all right, you know what? Players in the National Hockey League have realized that a 6'3", 220-pound guy who moves like that is going to be basically impossible to beat if he's in that kind of state of grace. And he hasn't exactly been in a state of grace, but it's and of course this is the comparison that people always make, and he's doomed to be judged by this comparison. But it's almost Patrick Waugh-like in that Waugh would give up the occasional stinker, right? Except that in the key moments and when you knew that the team needed a save, he was usually there. And I think maybe that's kind of the territory where Carey Price is now. I think back particularly to the game against Boston last week, where they knew the Bruins were going to come out. It was back-to-back nights for the Bruins. The Bruins are battered. They got all these guys out, except that pretty good team, humiliated the night before in Toronto. And Price makes two saves in the first period that he has absolutely no right to make. He makes a save, a blocker save on Seth Griffiths that just came out of nowhere. And then he made another save at the side of the net against, I can't remember who. And then there's also the breakaway save that he made in the previous game against Winnipeg, against Vander Kane. And it's like these saves early in the game where all of a sudden it's like there's a breakdown, the other team's coming, they're trying to get on top of the Habs, which is the game plan for everyone in the league, and the Habs have given up the first goal, like it feels like basically every game. And you know what? There's that big goalie, and he makes the save, and off they go, and survive to fight another day. And it's interesting in that he's not, like his stats are not superstar great right now. He's not making 40 saves a game. He doesn't have like a 960 save percentage. But as I say, it's like it's the key thing, right? He's kind of distilled it down to this kind of Zen monk essence of thou shalt make three or four saves at pivotal moments, and if you can keep your save percentage high on those saves, the rest will follow. I guess I don't know. It's
a super point. I mean, I wouldn't have him in my Vezina top three right now. Maybe he's top five overall for me right now, but yeah, it's true. What was your reaction to the Gonchar trade when it happened?
I thought it was not a dumb trade, but a kind of a pointless trade. I thought, okay, like Travis Moen is a very, very good penalty killer. He's a guy who's kind of a glue guy in the room. Although there's the legendary Scotty Bowman line about that, which is, get guys who are great in the room, that's great. Well, you know what? Maybe he can stay there because I want guys who are good on the ice, right?
Yeah, leave him. He's a good guy in the room, leave him in the room.
Exactly. And I just sort of thought, well, all right, what does Gonchar have to offer? Because I remember watching him last year and being kind of underwhelmed, and I remember seeing him, you know, the last season he played in Ottawa, and I know the sense from the Senators when he signed his free agent deal in Dallas was that probably that was too rich for the Wild. Certainly too rich for their blood, and probably it was a mistake in that they were kind of projecting him to decline a little bit. Except that, you know what? They brought him in. He's bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. He's obviously happy to be here, playing in Canada for the first time in his career. He's got his buddy Markov, his buddy Emelin. You know, it's a good place. The coach, he understands, he knows. And look, all of a sudden, goals start going in on the power play when he shows up in town. And I kind of thought it was a bit foolhardy to want a 40-year-old guy to come in and bump PK Subban, quite frankly, off the unit with Markov, except that it's worked, right? And I think having seven defensemen is not probably what you want to do for the medium term, but being able to benefit from having Nathan Beaulieu and Sergei Gonchar, look, it's an upgrade, right? And if you look at the situation where Mike Weaver is playing fewer minutes, 5-on-5, Emelin is playing more with Gonchar, I beg your pardon, on the right-hand side, because let's face it, Alexi Emelin needs all the help he could get. I mean, I think he's the weak point of this defense, and I think Habs fans are really going to enjoy watching three more years of this guy for $4 million a year. But having Gonchar around all of a sudden has fixed a bunch of things that ailed the team. And basically every move that Marc Bergevin has made this year has come up aces. I mean, to be able to wave a guy like Rene Bourque to basically force the coach into playing Yuri Saikach, who'd been sitting on his hands for seven games, you know, then you move out Moen to bring in Gonchar, and look at this. I mean, look at what's going on with this team.
Yeah, and that Moen move was symbolic in a lot of ways. That was the last player remaining of the 2009 redo of the Montreal Canadiens.
That's right.
That was it. When Gainey went about totally redoing the team, he was the last holdover.
That's right, and that's kind of amazing because it was like it seems like forever ago,
Mm-hmm.
It was only 5 years, right?
Yeah.
And you think about the way that you can do business. If you can figure out a way to get a useful player who, yes, is probably going to erode your cap room in the immediate term, but in exchange for a 32-year-old guy who's on 1.85 or 1.9 million for another year, and who is a declining asset and stuff too. I mean, like, you look at being able to make that trade. I actually think probably the main imperative behind that was a financial one. And for Gonchar to come in here, I mean, look, long may it continue as far as they're concerned. I mean, I'm not convinced that Sergei Gonchar is the kind of guy who's going to be able to give you 18 to 20 decent minutes a game. But if he's playing four of those minutes on the power play, then why not, right?
I find there, at this point, you know, 29 points in 19 games, leading the division, obviously looking very much like a playoff team again, obviously looking like a cup contender potentially. I find we are beginning to reach the breaking point, Sean, between the Habs fans that loathe Michel Therrien and the ones that are going to have to accept the fact that this team is really damn good and he's the coach.
although there will always be large, massive hordes of people out there who will say, yeah, but wait, how good could they be if they actually had a real coach?
they're exactly right. They would be 18-0-1 right now if Guy Boucher was the coach. You're completely
right. They'd be the 76-77 Habs. Honestly, you're right in the sense that, you can't really argue with the results, and all of that's true. I'm still not 100% convinced that Therrien is the guy for this team, mostly because when you actually look and dig at the stuff that ends up being predictive, things like Fenwick and the advanced stats, which the fact is that it's not a coincidence that the Fenwick champion in the last 7 seasons has found him or herself in the final four, right? I think the team, the best Fenwick team in the league, I believe, has always progressed at least to the conference final. There are systemic issues with this team. Therrien likes a style where they're dumping and chasing a lot more than this team needs to do, right? Therrien has, God love him, very strong allegiances to the players he believes in, sometimes to a fault. I think the GM understands the way that this team needs to be set up, and I think the GM is a pretty clever guy at shaping the coach's decision-making, quite frankly. Without telling Therrien what to do, I think you have to give some credit to Bergevin on this. I think Bergevin is a guy who probably plays the long game, and last year he was willing to do it his coach's way, and let's bring in Douglas Murray, more big, right? Let's bring in George Parros and guys like that. Mm-hmm. And this year it's like, well, no, actually I'm going to bring in a guy, Manny Malhotra, who's going to take half your defensive zone draws, and he's going to win 60-odd percent of them. And no, I'm going to bring in a guy called Tom Gilbert who might have 10 hits the entire year, right? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But who all he does is move the puck, move it forward, move it to a better spot, right? The Sakic guy, you know, we might be willing to stick with Rene Bourque for a while because of what he did in the playoffs and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, yeah, you might not like him all that much, but he's a veteran and you're going to stick with him. Well, guess what? We're going to send him down, right? We're going to waive the guy. And, you know, I'm not saying here that Bergevin is big footing his coach or that he's dictating, you know, on ice moves or anything like that from above. What I do think he's doing though is I think he's kind of building this team in a way that doesn't typically jibe with what Michel Therrien has been throughout his coaching career.
Well, and that is interesting too, and all of this is under the umbrella, of course, Sean, of Therrien signing that contract extension, but. Remember Doug McLean told me this story. He said when he was running the Blue Jackets, Dave King was coaching, and he went down to the dressing room one day and said, Dave, this may be news to you, but we're not going to win the Stanley Cup this year. How come Rusty Kleslau only played 5 minutes last night? And the next night, he played 3 minutes. And the next thing Dave King knew, he was fired when it comes to Blue Jackets. How much of a message by waving Bourque, by trading Moen, almost forcing the hand to play Jiří Sakic and Bourneval as well when he's healthy. How much of that was, How much of that was Bergevin saying, Michel, this is how we're going to do business?
I think there's a part of that for sure. I don't know necessarily that that Therrien was storming into Bergevin's office and thumping his fist on the desk and saying, "No, we must believe in René Bourque." But Moen to me is a classic Therrien player, and for them for him to be shipped for an aging defenseman is an eyebrow raising move when you think about the conservatism that usually pervades every iota of this organization. And the one thing I will say is I actually do think that with the contract extension, part of that was in lieu of anything better. Part of it was in recognition of services rendered. Part of it was we will give you a vote of confidence based on the way that you coached in the playoffs. And let's see where it goes. And, you know, as you guys know, having an extension in your pocket means basically nothing, right? I mean, you know, Ronnie Wilson, is Ronnie Wilson still under contract, or he might have just expired now?
I think he's expired now. I think he's done counting his money. That's why making noise about getting back in.
Sure, it's one of those things where you just think about it coldly that these guys, look, does anybody actually believe that Michel Therrien is going to fulfill the terms of this contract? I don't. Not because I think he's a terrible guy, not because I think he's a replacement-level coach. I think he's a decent coach. I think there are better coaches out there. But he has learned how to do things, and I think maybe that's kind of the way that we need to look at this. Not so much that Bergevin is going to pull strings and direct things, but that Bergevin is going to try and encourage him to move in certain directions with his approach to the game. And when you look at the way that they were playing to start the season, where they were winning and getting into some bad habits, and then, you know, Therrien was trying to crack the whip on certain things, but it's hard to be hard on a team when they're winning. They go through that stretch where they get blown out at home a couple of times. They win a really lucky game in the shootout in Calgary. They lose that game in Edmonton, and then all of a sudden, maybe the pressure's on the guys a little bit more. They need to pay attention. But to me, I keep waiting to see the team that he was coaching in the playoffs last year, and you didn't really see it in the first bit, but now you're starting to see it a lot more. And I think they're playing smarter, and, you know, he has guys. Look, you can tell Yuri Sakach to dump the puck in as much as you want. Guess what? He's not going to do it. It's not how he plays the game, right?
Yeah.
And
right.
It seems to me that when you have guys like Eller who are going to be playing with confidence, and when you've got Alex Galchenyuk and all these other guys, like, this is not a perfect team. There are still issues up and down the lineup with this team. And he's not a perfect coach, but I think if you can reach this balance where they're maximizing the players that they have, and giving a chance to a few new guys to kind of show their wares, then probably that's where you want to be, right? I mean, this is still a transition. Alex Galchenyuk is still not yet the player that he's going to become, although you can see it, that it's not far. You know, I still wonder what would happen if you had a coach who was a little bit more hospitable to P.K. Subban's approach to the game. He's kind of woken up here offensively in the last couple of games, but he's a guy who you can tell, he's got the new contract, he's got the letter on his sweater, he's been browbeaten by various coaches over the years, that, you know, I still don't understand why that player ever dumps the puck in under any circumstance when he steps over the red line with space. I just make, you know what, carry it, lug it, go, don't even care, right? If I were his coach, I'd be like, run like the wind, and other people will fix your mistakes if need be, and if it creates havoc inside the dressing room, I'll take care of it, right?
Yeah.
Because of what he gives you, and so that's one of the reasons where I sort of look at this team and the way that they're playing. And yes, he's a very smart and ruthless tactician in certain regards, but, you know, and he's improved a lot of the things that he you know, or I shouldn't say improved. He's kind of come around to some of the ideas of modern possession hockey. But I'm still not 100% convinced that he's going to be the guy going forward. I guess is the long-winded way of saying that we'll see.
I think you hit on all points. Hey, Sean, we're up against it. Thank you so much for joining us today, man. And
Thanks, bud.
Catch up with you soon about the first place Montreal Canadiens.
Hey, anytime, gents. Have a good one.
Thanks, Sean.
There you
good
go.
Stuff.
Sean Gordon. Great stuff. Yeah, Therrien stuff was good. That's something I've been really interested in seeing, because I know that he's not necessarily the fan of a lot of Habs fans. And like Sean said, they can point to the team metrics and say that the way that they're playing is unsustainable if they don't turn around some of their possession numbers and stuff like that. But Hard to argue with teams on a 14-4-1 start.
No, I get that. I'm just saying, and that was my point to Sean off the bat. I still don't know that I've seen a great game out of the greatest team in the NHL right now.
Two things real quick. First off, a name being bandied about on our QOD about which member of the media should be in the Hall of Fame. Sherry Ross is a very good choice. Sherry Ross, of course, first woman to be a play-by-play and also a color analyst on the reg for an NHL team for the Devils. That's a great choice. Was a good writer, too. Kind of missed her as a writer. But secondly, back to the Hall of Fame class and the moments we have remaining here. Listen, I like Rob Blake. He's been on the show. He's a good dude. Do you get the sense that maybe Rob Blake's one of those Hall of Famers that's like, he seems like he should be in?
I don't know. He's pretty decorated, man. He's pretty decorated. I'm sorry.
I mean, Madonna, no-brainer. Hasek, should build a wing for him. Forsberg no-brainer.
Blake, easy.
Was Blake top?
Last 20 years,
Blake top five, top eight,
That top 10. That shot was killer, and you know what? You see this, every time I see PK Subban hit, I think of Rob Blake. Man, did anyone hit harder with his ass than Rob Blake?
He was a hell of a checker. He was a hell of a hitter.
Step over the blue line, boom, Rob Blake's ass, sit down. And that's been always, and I know the offensive numbers were there too, and I'm gonna get another stump here, but the last two, specifically defensive defensemen, Leo Boivin and Fern Flamin, went in the Hall of Fame in what, 86 and 90?
That's not a good
name. In his day, he was the toughest. Ask Cordy.
That's the name you
guys
give a cop when you get in trouble and you're just
Fern Flamin.
What was your name?
Try it.
Fern Flamin. Fern Flamin, sir.
Guy was toughest. Ask you the old times, man.
How old are you, Mr. Flamin? Old enough. Old enough for what? To party.
But like, I get all this thing about who should be in, who shouldn't be out. The defensive defenseman, and you know where I'm going with this. Adam Foote should get more consideration than he does. We just completely devalue the specifically defensive defenseman in the NHL.
Real quick.
Yeah.
Since 2000, Blake better than Vatisov or more worthy? That's a no. Come on. More worthy than Langway. After your defensive defenseman Valentine.
My defensive defenseman Valentine. Yeah, I'll give Lampel Langway in there.
More worthy than Burke. I'm sorry, Bork.
I'm not the biggest Ray Bork guy. I'm not. I'm saying like right. I'd probably a little bit below Ray Bork.
Coffee.
Below Paul Coffee.
Murphy.
Above Murphy.
Oh, above Murphy. Okay. McGinnis. Right there with him?
Right there with Al McGinnis. Yeah.
I won't even ask Stevens. We all know he's below Stevens. Leach.
Probably a little below Leach.
But I mean, these better are than
Mark
guys, though.
Better than Mark Howe. Better than Mark Howe, I would say. Right?
Rob
yep.
Blake.
Yep, better than Mark Howe, 100%. Although, man, that big four, Howe, McCrimmon, Crossman, and Marsh was fantastic for the Flyers. Oh, are they good?
Niedermeyer was a freak. Niedermeyer might be the prototypical defenseman. We'll put him below Niedermeyer.
No one skated like that.
To bring up this guy lastly, because so when Josh wrote his piece today about the Hall of Fame and who he'd build the team around, he had this man woefully low on the list. And I told him two things. I said, first of all, I think you're wrong on it. And second of all, I'm protecting you from the readers. who will disregard your entire list for if you have this man in the 40s or whatever he had him at.
Go quick. I gotta go pick up my kids, so you gotta go quick.
Blake or Chelios?
Chris Chelios. Chris Chelios is one of the most complete defensemen I ever saw.
I completely agree. And Joshy and me had a disagreement about Chelios, so I'm glad you said that. You make me feel validated.
He doesn't like Chelios?
You gotta go.
I do. I have to pick up my son.
He hated Chelios. He had Chelios hella low on that list.
Josh needs to learn that the
Puck Daddy readership will value his work and enjoy the debate and all the thing. And there's a huge debate happening on the blog right now about a story.
Yeah.
But if you do a miss, if you listen, learn your lesson from the people who put Yamir Yager on the Rangers Mount Puckmore. Okay. Everything else in life will be invalidated if you make that misstep. All right.
Everybody go over to Josh's Twitter feed and give him a little cup check.
Yeah. Thanks to Sean Gordon. We got cut a little bit short today due to scheduling stuff. Back tomorrow. Tomorrow will be a fun one, ladies and gentlemen. Tomorrow will be the annual who belongs in the Hall of Fame debate. Gird your loins, people. It's going
to
be a good one.
Do I get
one.
To talk about Lauren
and,
Shabbat, the inventor of the blocker?
Bye.
No, maybe? Okay. No, Lauren Shabbat tomorrow. Thank you.